Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting for this Tuesday, February 9th. My name is Frank Hornstein. I'm the chair of the committee. Our first item of business is going to be the taking of the roll. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Representative Petersburg.
Present.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hausman.
Present.
Representative Heinrich.
Present.
Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative Murphy.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Torkelson.
Present.
Representative West.
Here.
There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes from Thursday, February 4th. Representative Petersburg, this will be a voice vote if people can unmute. Do we have a motion, Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the approval of the February 4th minutes of this committee.
All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion.
Mr. Chair, you're muted.
Sorry about that. Members, we have a very exciting committee meeting planned for today. Our focus is going to be on the climate impacts of transportation. And we're going to start off with a presentation from Mr. Paul Douglas. We'll move into a second panel from there featuring the Pollution Control Agency and a presentation from the Department of Transportation Sustainable Transportation Advisory Committee featuring the president of Xcel Energy. We're so happy to have him, Mr. Chris Clark. And then our final panel will be a couple of people from the nonprofit sector. So we really have a very diverse group of voices, private, public, nonprofit today. But we're going to start with our meteorologist. And I'm so excited that Paul Douglas can join us today. Many of you know Mr. Douglas as the, for many, many years, several decades, in fact, the a WCCO chief meteorologist. He, I think, has been a pioneer both in his career at CCO and since then on really bringing weather literally into people's homes, offices, businesses with very innovative technology. His very a wonderful way of just explaining things in layperson's terms. I am so happy that he's taken time out of his busy schedule to be with us today to just really brief us on the latest on the science of climate. And Mr. Douglas, it is 7 above, which I think this is probably the first above zero ambient temperature we've had in a bit. I think the wind chill is still below zero. Mr. Douglas is the founder and CCO currently of Predictix Corporation. Where he is, again, bringing weather literally into homes and businesses across the country and around the world. So honored to have you, Mr. Douglas. Welcome to the House Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee. Please state your name for our record and proceed. And unmute. Oh. Can you unmute, Mr. Douglas? There we go. Oops. Still having a little trouble hearing you. Any tech advice for Mr. Douglas?
He's in Florida.
He may want to check to see if his laptop is muted. If he looks on the very top, like the numbers, there's an all mute for your laptop, so his laptop may be muted.
Were you able to hear that, Mr. Douglas? Unmute at the top of your laptop. Mr. Dodge, maybe there's a way to communicate with Mr. Douglas here and we can work this out.
He's in Florida.
Are you using AirPods? Maybe try disconnecting the Bluetooth and just using the computer audio.
I think you should check the setting on the air conditioner. His computer might be overheating.
Okay, let's stop ribbing the guest here.
He's in Florida.
I know, we heard Representative Murphy. We're gonna give this a couple of minutes here. We could come back to Mr. Douglas too. I'm getting a few texts here. You can call in, one suggestion was to call in an audio if we can't get this to work, but he does have some slides I think that would be important. I think Mr. Dodge is contacting you. Let's see. He's got an idea. He's got an idea. Wait a minute, he's saying. Okay. Well, I'll also say that he has an afternoon show on WCCO every day. So you can catch him there. Members, we'll give this one more minute, but I want to maybe, since we do have Mr. Clark with us, he could potentially start, but we're going to just give this technology one more shot here. I'm sure we can work this out. Mr. Dodge, are you in contact with Mr. Douglas?
John and I are working on it.
This is John.
Okay. John's working on it. Okay. Well, members, I guess I'll give a weather forecast. It's bright and sunny outside. We have gotten above zero now for the first time. It's 7 above in the Twin Cities. Although we still expect overnight temperatures below zero for the rest of the week, and we do expect another round of that polar air coming in for the weekend. So for the remainder of the afternoon, it will be sunny, high between 5 and 10 above here in the cities. Clear tonight, low of about 5 to 10 below once again. And then tomorrow, similar today, sunny skies, high temperatures in the single digits.
Okay. Mr. Chair, this is the Transportation Committee. What's the congestion out there?
I would just encourage members to dial 511. That's the MnDOT number for congestion.
Mr. Chair, you don't have your traffic helicopter going right now?
No, not until rush hour. I'm going to... Can we get an update here on the, we may just need to have Mr. Douglas call in, I think at this point, the technology is not working properly. And if not, we'll go straight to Mr. Clark.
Hello, hello, hello.
Oh, here we have you, Mr. Douglas.
Some tech wizard, huh?
Yeah, well, I did give them the forecast though, while we were waiting.
I apologize to everybody. I know how valuable your time is. Can you hear me now?
Yes, loud and clear.
Verizon commercial. Okay. Yeah, I'm in Florida for a few weeks, and it's a lovely spot, but the internet is wonky, as I have discovered, and the Wi-Fi specifically. So I had to go to a different location here to try to find enough internet bandwidth to connect. So apologies, but if you can hear me now, I think we can give this a shot.
We can hear you and see you. We can hear you and see you, Mr. Douglas. Thank you for hanging in there with us.
Apologies. It would be funny if it was somebody else, but anyway, I appreciate the invitation, Representative Hornstein. And by the way, I arranged this vacation 6 months ago. I had no idea what was coming in February. I do feel some guilt not being in Minnesota right now, but it will pass. And in the meantime, would you like me to go through this deck?
Yeah, I think that we have about, you know, we're only about 5 minutes behind. So I think if we can have your presentation wrapped up by 1:20 or 1:25 at the latest, we'll be able to get back on schedule.
Absolutely. I will go quickly. So does this show up?
Yeah, we have a slide titled Minnesota Climate Change Overview.
Yes. Okay. So what I'm going to try to present here in about 10 minutes is a quick overview, some of the things that captured my imagination here as a meteorologist looking at the symptoms of a warming Minnesota. So I'll launch right into this. First things first, I am involved with three businesses right now, Minnesota businesses. I'm on my seventh company, for better or worse, and they don't get any easier. I wish they did, but they don't. But I have a consulting business, meteorological consulting for extreme weather called Predictix, and then a data company called Aris Weather. And so we have a few dozen developers and sales folks, the west end of town. And again, it was the weather. It wasn't a documentary. It wasn't even the climate science, but it was the weather, which increasingly was playing out of tune by the late 90s, early 2000s. And there's a whole field emerging, a new scientific field, talking about attribution. Look, we've always had droughts, floods, hurricanes, wildfires. Is a warming climate really adding fuel to the fire? And what we seem to be seeing is that not every day, not every week, but increasingly, a warmer, wetter atmosphere is producing more extreme extremes. This is the temperature change just since 1970, about 2.7 degrees warmer in Minnesota, little more than the national average. And the warming is greater the farther north you go, higher latitudes warming faster. Here in the Twin Cities, just since 1970, 50 years of data, we've warmed about 3.7 degrees. So we're warming at the rate statewide about 2 degrees per century, which again, a week like this, it has a nice ring. You're telling me Minnesota may be a warmer place in the future with fewer of these extreme outbreaks. The warming signal, ironically, is strongest late winter, early spring, February into March. Not every year, but most years. And winters are warming to the tune of about 5.7 degrees warmer just since 1970. But a lot of people shake their head and wonder why in a warming world can I still feel cold? We're still seeing sub-zero outbreaks, although not the duration and intensity we did as recently as the 1970s, even the 1990s. This is data from the Minnesota DNR, which I just received from Kenny Blumenfeld, which made me do a double take. It shows an average of about 40 sub-zero nights back in the 1880s in the Twin Cities. Now that number is down to 22. That's the average. The weather is never average. It fluctuates, but you step back and you look at the trends. And yes, we have some urban heat island warming from the cities, but the same general trends showing up in other stations around the state. This is Milan, Minnesota, which had closer to 50 sub-zero nights around 1900. That has dropped, not as dramatically, but now it's more like 35, 36 sub-zero nights. So yes, we still get cold. On some level, that's reassuring, but we don't see the spasms of prolonged sub-zero. Back in the 1970s and even the early 80s, we would routinely go down to 20, 25, 30 below in the Twin Cities, air temperature. Now, you know, 15 below is a big deal. So yes, it gets cold, but talking specifically about duration and intensity of the cold, I find this interesting. And of course, we're wired to react to weather. We look out our windows and assume what's happening here is happening everywhere, when in fact, this is from yesterday. This shows temperature anomalies, and you can see that cold outbreak over the upper Midwest. While much of the nation shaded in red and orange is warmer than average, much of the planet. So again, it's important to look at the big trends. See here. Okay. Apologies. My screen sharing just got a little wonky here, but I'm. One second. Boy, tech is great when it works. Try this one more time. You're still with me? I'm with you.
Yeah, we hear you. And we had a sneak preview of some good slides before we lost you for a sec, but we can hear your voice.
Okay. It's like being on live television. let me just take this full screen again and one second here. Okay. Share screen.
We have your voice still, but no video.
No images. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have the slides pulled up. I can share my screen.
Okay. Mr. Douglas, our vice chair, can share it on her screen, and I don't know if we can then describe the slide and you can talk about it. Would that be the best approach?
Sure.
You might be able to see it. You might be able to see it, actually. So, yeah, go ahead, Vice Chair Cagle.
Mr. Chair, this is John too. I'm happy to do that as well. And members should all have this in their virtual packets.
So yeah, now we have the, that's a great idea. So just move forward. We have the slide of the.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Terrific. On slide 10.
That's slide 10, okay, great. This shows the record set by decade. And again, If the Twin Cities wasn't warming, if the state wasn't warming, we would expect roughly an equal number of record highs and record lows. This shows the proportion of record highs versus record lows for the Twin Cities. And that is the case across most cities over the northern tier states. So let's move on to the next one.
Got 11 up.
Climate Extreme Index.
I am seeing. Okay, this is a measure of the percentage of the United States experiencing extreme flood or extreme drought. And again, it shows an increase in the percentage of the nation. This is one of the the data sets that made me do a double take. Again, stepping back, looking at the trends, more of the nation in any given year in recent decades. And there is the one-day precipitation events. It's raining harder when it does rain, especially during the warm season. This is the percentage of the United States experiencing extreme 24-hour rainfall amounts over time, with a definite increase from about 8-10% to closer to 20-22% of the nation experiencing extreme flooding since 2010. Okay, moving on. The DNR talks about mega rain, 6 inches of rain over 1,000 square miles. And I find it interesting. Let's see, if you can move to the next one after this. What is that, 14?
Yeah, 14 of the 22 mega rains.
Okay, there must be a lag.
Yeah, right now we're on 14 of the 22 mega rains since 1983, I believe.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
It's actually a stunning statistic.
Yeah. And again, look, there was no Doppler radar before the early 90s. And yet the DNR has put together forensic evidence, newspaper headlines from small towns around the state going back to when Minnesota became a state. And again, the perception is we're seeing more flooding. That does, in fact, show up in the data. Okay, what is up next? Because I'm...
Change in annual precipitation normals for the Twin Cities. And there's
right,
a...
okay, I found this interesting. Mark Seely shared this. To say that it's getting wetter out there over time is not a controversial statement. This is 30-year average rainfall for the Twin Cities. From 41 to 70, it was closer to 26 inches. The latest 30-year average, it's over 31 inches. So, yes, it is trending wetter. And I talked to a lot of people in the state, and farmers, you know, they don't like to necessarily use the term climate change, but to a person, they talk about changes in the patterns. This isn't what I remember growing up with. Yes, we had extremes, but the extremes are more extreme. And so they talk about these changes. The growing season is increasing. The orange bar graph, again, this is Milan, Minnesota, no urban heat island in Milan, but it shows that the decade of the 2010s, the season between freezes, the average number of days above freezing per year has gone from about 130 to closer to 160 in the span of about 100 years. So, and people want solutions. They don't want gloom and doom. We have enough issues. They ask, well, what can we do? And I, from my perspective as a would-be entrepreneur, every threat is an opportunity to make everything we do more storm-proof, flood-resistant, drought-tolerant. Inventing new methods and materials, 3M has been very good about that. Ecolab, a long list of Minnesota companies that are already ahead of the bell curve. And I point out that clean energy jobs, renewable energy, creating jobs 12 times faster than the rest of the economy. I believe that statistic is still valid. At the end of the day, though, we all live in our bubbles. We react to our own experiences. I've driven a couple of electric cars since about 2015, and my wife was skeptical, very skeptical, the transition to electric. She has since seen the light because we are seeing a return on investment. Less money per mile of driving, and the maintenance costs are virtually negligible. Every year I call up and I say, should I bring the car in for a tune-up? And there's a long pause. The Tesla dealer says, you can bring it in if you're feeling insecure, Paul. You don't have to. There are 150 moving parts on the Tesla. Typical fossil fuel power, gas-powered car has about 10,000 moving parts. There's simply less that can go wrong. So I know we're at that inflection point now, and people tend to change their minds and change their habits when they can get more performance for less cost. And I think we're at that point right now. We're very close to that point. I had a chance to talk with Governor Walz on my radio show last Friday, and we talked about gas stations transitioning to service stations where you have an option of gasoline or electric to address range anxiety. You know, if there's always a charger 5 minutes away, is that going to get more people to take a calculated risk on electric versus gas? I know it's more complicated than that, but my last frame, I think this is the last one. And I don't have the answer, Guy, but how do we accelerate and incentivize, in many cases, the markets, business to provide these clean energy solutions faster? And again, I've owned 40 cars in my lifetime since I was 16. I'm a car guy. I love cars, but I don't think at this point I'm going to be going back to gasoline powered. Being able to fuel up in your garage, especially when it's 10 below, you come out and your car is charged and you have 300 miles. It's pretty empowering and liberating. And the next generation of batteries will have 500 miles of range. And the costs are coming down. Prices are coming down. And the more we can foster competition, I think the faster those prices will continue to come down. So I'm encouraged. I'm optimistic. We have a climate challenge, but there are solutions. I think turning up the dial and moving faster is where my head is at. And I appreciate everything this committee is doing to look at all the options. You get smart people in a room, great things can happen. So thank you, and apologies for the technical glitch.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Douglas. If you can hang around for, I know you have a busy schedule, you've got to prepare for your radio show, but if you have time, we have one or two questions for you. Would that work for you?
I've got about 5 minutes, yes.
Okay, as do we. So we'll start with Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually just wanted to remind the committee that I was a House trained page, so I'm glad those skills came in useful here.
Thank you. Well
Absolutely.
Done.
Absolutely. yes, and you know, we talk a lot about resilience in climate science, and I think that this was a very resiliency and adaptability, and so I find your presentation was both resilient and adaptable, Mr. Douglas. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Douglas, thank you for presenting for us. I'm glad to share some of our cold weather sometime, but I don't know how to save it for you. But my question is in regards to air movement around the Earth. So how does the air move through the Earth, and how fast does it get back to where the air that's over us right now comes back to Minnesota, and how does that all mix up? Because it seems to me that what we're doing, where it has an impact into the rest, the rest of the world also impacts us too. So how do we deal with that piece of it?
Well, you're right. Everything is interconnected. It's a little like the ocean, right? You drop a twig into the ocean. Is that twig going to come back to you at some point? I guess if you have enough time, yes. Everything is interrelated, and every country needs to more or less be on the same page pursuing some sort of net zero emission strategy by a set year. And I think there are ways that this can be made more fair and more equitable. whether it's through tariffs, you know, if the Chinese aren't doing what they need to be doing, the Russians aren't doing what they need to be doing, I think there's a way to address this on the global stage. But it's happening. It's not variations in sunlight or volcanic activity that drove a lot of the previous swings in climate. Yes, the ice ages, what have you. We can go back and point to what triggered that. Now, the most likely explanation, with a high degree of confidence, is that it's the additional 40 billion tons of greenhouse gases that we dump into the atmosphere every year. And you put more CO2 in, temperatures go up. You drop CO2, temperatures go down. So I don't know if I've addressed that question, but everything is interconnected. Your point is well taken, no question. And what we do matters, what the Chinese do, what every nation on earth does matters. Ironically, it's some of the developing nations, the poorer nations around the world that didn't contribute to this problem that are suffering some of the greatest impacts over the tropics. So that's why, you know, you say what you will about the Paris Accord and international treaties. We need some with teeth and consequences if countries don't live up to their pledges. I personally, coming at this as an entrepreneur, as a businessman, I think the solution is to empower the markets and companies. You know, I'm not sure we need more layers of government. I think we need 100 more Teslas. And it would be great if a few of those upstarts, those future Teslas, are based right here in Minnesota, especially when it comes to ag tech, clean ag. What can Minnesota be offering that other states can't? So I think there's a smart way to empower the markets to go faster and cheaper, and that government can provide that level playing field. But at the end of the day, private enterprise will create the cleaner solutions we need, less cost, fewer unpleasant side effects.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Douglas, for just a really very, very helpful way to kick off our discussion today. I really liked what you had in your last slide, debating solutions, not science. And I think that your data is so important for us to consider. And I think, as you've often reminded your listeners and viewers and all of us over the years, there's a difference between weather and climate. And I think that your presentation certainly underscored that. So thank you again. And members, if you have other questions, you know, funnel them to us, and we can perhaps get a few of them to you, Mr. Douglas, in writing.
Please.
And of course, all of your materials will be on our website here and archived. And we appreciate so much your taking your time. And I'm glad we were able to fix our technology problems and get your presentation in. Thank you so much.
It was a team effort. Representative Hornstein and your entire committee, thank you for your patience. And apologies for the technical glitches. I'm just glad I don't work at a nuclear power plant. I thought I had mastered Zoom, but apparently events conspired against me. But I appreciate what you're doing. And thank you for keeping an open mind. And yes, if you have any questions, if I can't answer them, even if I can, I will make sure I will point you to the right answers, to the experts that can get you the answers that you need. So thank you for what you're doing.
Appreciate it. And, you know, we'll certainly be in touch. This is an ongoing process and conversation. So thanks again, Mr. Douglas.
You bet. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, members. So we're just a little behind, not too bad. I think what we'll do is have Mr. Kolash till about 1:50 or so. And then we'll pivot to the Sustainable Transportation Advisory Committee till about 2:15 or so. And then we'll have our last speakers in the last 15 minutes. But we'll, you know, within that a few minutes plus or minus, but those are the general guidelines here so we can get everybody in and have a good conversation. So our next presenter is Mr. Frank Kolesch from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. MPCA has done some very good research on where our greenhouse gas emissions are coming from in the state of Minnesota. Of course, the PCA has some ideas about how to address that in the transportation sector, which we'll get into. But we'll start with Mr. Kolesch's, you know, research on sources of greenhouse gas emissions. And, you know, his presentation is going to include transportation as the leading, now the leading contributor. So that's why it's so critical that this is an issue that our committee addresses. Mr. Kolesch, thank you very much for coming. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Frank Kolesch. I'm climate director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I am very pleased to give this presentation about the current status of Minnesota's greenhouse gas emissions. I will now share my screen and go into my presentation. So to look at the overall emissions in Minnesota, we start by comparing where we are at with the Next Generation Energy Act goal. So the green line that you see here on this chart represents the targets that that were put into the 2007 Next Generation Energy Act statute, which established goals signed by Governor Pawlenty and passed by a bipartisan a group of the legislature. So what it established were goals for 2015, which was a 15% reduction in emissions statewide, by 2025, a 30% reduction, and by 2050, an 80% reduction. And the blue line on this chart shows the actual emissions that the Pollution Control Agency and the Department of Commerce are working on with our estimates. And so we started in 2005 with about just under 175 million tons. And in 2018, we were down to 100, and that represents an 8% reduction from 2005, which does not meet the 2015 goal. And if you in particular look at the emissions in 2017 and 2018, the last 2 points on this this blue line, we are headed in the wrong direction. We saw emissions go up from 2016 to 2017 and now 2018. So we're headed in the wrong direction for emission reductions. And we are not on track to meet our 30% reduction goal by 2025, nor are we on track to meet the emission reduction goal for 2050 that is in current statute with the Next Generation Energy Act. So looking more specifically at where the emissions are coming from in Minnesota, as Chair Hornstein noted, transportation is now the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the state, just a bit above the electric generation sector, and also just slightly above the agriculture, forestry, and land use sector. I will talk more specifically about each sector in a few slides, but wanting to go over this as an overview of seeing that the transportation sector and the agriculture, forestry, and land use sector have seen modest emission reductions since 2005. The electric generation sector has seen significant emission reductions since 2005 and is the only sector on track to meet the Next Generation Energy Act goals for 2025. And then we look to the other sectors where we are actually seeing increases in emissions. So that's in our industrial sector, our residential sector, and our commercial sector. And a significant amount of the emissions from those areas are coming from the use of natural gas within those buildings to heat those buildings or to produce heat for the industrial processes. And then we also do have the waste sector that we look at and we make sure that we are bringing that in, and that has achieved an 11% reduction since 2005 through primarily controlling our methane emissions. So now looking at each individual sector more specifically, transportation is the largest source of emissions. And therefore, it is in need of the most swift action. Most of the emission reductions that we saw in this sector between 2005 and 2018 came because of federal actions that increased fuel economy in the fleet of vehicles for the United States, and also that had more stringent greenhouse gas emission standards for the vehicles at the tailpipe. And unfortunately, in the previous administration, both of those were weakened and rolled back. So the ability to achieve emission reductions in the sector is particularly challenged with more recent actions taken at the federal level. And then when we look at where the emissions come from within the transportation sector, we see that the light and medium duty vehicles, and this is going to encompass the passenger cars that we have, the pickup trucks, the SUVs, the crossover utility vehicles, and vans and minivans, those vehicles that are burning gasoline and diesel account for more than half of all the transportation emissions in Minnesota, highlighting the importance of our engines that are burning gasoline and diesel on our roads for greenhouse gas emission reductions in this sector. So now looking at this over a longer time series since 2005, this chart just shows the breakdown of light duty trucks being the largest source of emissions in this sector, followed by passenger vehicles, and then the heavy duty trucks. And when we add up the emissions from light duty trucks, passenger cars, and heavy duty trucks, then we're seeing more than 70% of our emissions coming from our use of diesel and gasoline on our roads to move people and things around the state. And so it highlights the importance of focusing on these types of vehicles going forward to seek greenhouse gas emission reductions into the future. So as a summary on transportation, it has seen a 7% emission reduction since 2005, again, due primarily to federal changes that have now been rolled back and weakened. And so the actions that the administration has identified for moving forward with emission reductions in this area is, this slide is incorrect. This has an incorrect slide. We will update that for you. But what we need to do is adopt the clean cars rules. We also need to prioritize the use and expand the use of biofuels, cleaner fuels for the transportation sector, and that includes low carbon biofuels and cleaner biofuels to offset some of the fossil fuel greenhouse gases or fossil fuel gasoline and replacing diesel with biodiesel going forward. And then also focusing on how we can build out the electric vehicle charging infrastructure. So the Pollution Control Agency is doing that through our Volkswagen settlement funds, and also the Department of Administration received bonding funds for building out the electric vehicle infrastructure, and MnDOT is also looking into the role that they can play in expanding the electric vehicle infrastructure, charging infrastructure in Minnesota. Looking to the next sector of largest emissions, that's the electric generation sector. And again, this sector is on track to meet the Next Generation Energy Act goal based on announcements that have been made by Xcel Energy and Minnesota Power and Great River Energy going forward to decarbonize their electric generation, both inside of Minnesota and at sources that supply electricity that are outside of Minnesota. So the actions that we need to focus on here are continuing the success of the renewable energy standard and the electric efficiency standard in Minnesota that were passed in the late 2000s and into early 2010s, and expand those and looking to adopt the 100% clean energy by 2040 standard that the Department of Commerce is leading. And part of that also includes an increase in the renewable energy standard. We also want to prioritize the clean energy first so that as we replace generation in Minnesota, we're going for zero emission sources, the cleanest emission sources moving ahead. And then also we want to identify a target to reduce emissions from our households and our businesses and the buildings that we use through increasing energy efficiency and seeking fewer emission reductions from those sources. Turning to agriculture, forestry, and land use, this is a more complicated sector. You can tell from the title, it includes a number of areas within this. Agriculture includes the emissions that are coming from the use of our lands for crop agriculture and also from animal agriculture. Within crop agriculture, we have highly organic soils, so we have a significant amount of carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxides that are coming off of those soils from the biogeochemical processing of our lands. There's also a significant opportunity for storing carbon on our lands through the use of best management practices that protect the climate, protect water quality, and build soil health. Within the forestry sector, we are seeing that this is a place where we can store carbon. And so the variation that you saw in the sector slide that I provided earlier was due primarily to the changes in carbon stored on our forests in Minnesota. We work with the Department of Natural Resources to gather that data and put that together. And it represents a significant opportunity that Minnesota has to store carbon in our forests, on our croplands, in our prairie lands, and including our urban forests throughout Minnesota. So the actions that we're really looking for are to help farmers implement climate smart practices, including cover crops, including using and expanding the use of our Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program, and the Board of Water and Soil Resources looking for grant opportunities to provide incentives and provide assistance to moving to land practices that protect the climate, protect water quality, build soil health, and also can improve rural economics through the farming economics. And then the Department of Natural Resources is also seeking initiatives to increase tree cover in Minnesota by planting more than 12 million new trees, capturing 5 million tons of carbon on our landscapes, and also to build the capacity to plant those trees with more sapling capacity in Minnesota. And now turning to the three sectors that we're going up, the industrial, residential, and commercial sectors, and a little bit put these together within a buildings sector. These sectors have actually gone up 21%, and it's primarily due to increased use of natural gas in these buildings for space heating and for process heating. There's also some oil and coal use, fossil fuel use, coal and oil in the industrial sector, and some oil use in the commercial sector. And so what we're looking to do within these sectors is some of the more challenging sectors, and the development of the technology is a little bit behind where we are at with the electric generation sector or the transportation sector. But we really want to focus on the Department of Commerce looking for a carbon reduction goal for existing buildings in Minnesota, again, building on our success with our energy efficiency programs. And the Department of Labor and Industry looking to develop more energy efficient commercial and large multifamily buildings with a goal of a net zero by 2036 for those buildings through the use of updated and the most current climate protective building codes going forward.
Mr. Kolesh, if you could just maybe we'll conclude here with this slide, and then we'll have Representative Kosnick's question, maybe one or two others after that.
Very good, thank you. Yes, I will close up that this is all part of the climate change executive order from the governor signed in 2019, and the work of the climate change subcabinet, where we are charged with establishing policies and strategies to put Minnesota back on track to meet or exceed our greenhouse gas emission reduction goals and achieve greater resiliency in the face of the coming changes due to our climate. And we're particularly interested in ensuring that there's an equitable distribution of benefits and address the disparities and current impacts related to climate change. And with that, I will stop sharing my screen and...
Thank you. We have a few minutes for questions. I'm going to start with Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was wondering if Mr. Kolesh could explain to the committee and those watching, you know, why are we legislatively setting specific standards for Minnesota, California standards, and submitting Minnesotans to the desires of California or Sacramento legislators instead of working within the state legislator here in St. Paul to figure out what we want to do for Minnesotans. So why are we doing California standards and mandating that instead of going through the legislature?
Mr. Kolesh.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that question. The reason we are pursuing the Clean Cars Minnesota rulemaking is because in the current structure under the Federal Clean Air Act, there are two choices that are available to states for emission vehicle motor vehicle emission standards. That is either the federal standards, which, as I said during my presentations, were recently weakened by the federal government to reduce their protection and especially reduce the amount of greenhouse gas controls that would be at the tailpipes for motor vehicles. So because Transportation is the largest sector in Minnesota, the greenhouse gas emission sector in Minnesota. And because we also get additional benefits to Minnesota from other air pollution benefits by adopting the clean cars standards, we have decided to move forward with adopting those standards. And based on the authorities that were existing in our statutes, to adopt those standards because we think that those are most protective for Minnesota to protect from the coming climate crisis and also to protect the health of Minnesotans from motor vehicle emission pollution.
Do you have a quick follow-up, Representative Koznick?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's just troubling that we're going to subject Minnesotans to the will of Sacramento and California, and we do have Mr. Kolesch had stated, we could follow the federal guidelines, which I think would be easier for the automotive industry and probably more fair than to subject ourselves to California. And I guess that's just the policy choice that the administration has decided to overstep the purview of Minnesota legislators for California. And that's unfortunate, but that's their policy prerogative, I guess.
Thank you. We have lots of hands, but we have to move on. I'm going to ask for Representative Mason and Representative Petersburg, and then Representative Elkins, if it's really quick, we can get to you. But at that point, we're going to have to move on. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, and I was in the legislature in 2007 and 8 when we passed that, and I know in many cases, we're trying to follow to meet those goals, but there's so many times where it's hard for me to understand where we have goals like that, and then we're doing things like permitting the Line 3, which to me is going to totally make it almost impossible for us to keep on with our goals. And I know that electric cars are really expensive, but it's still, how do we go? Yeah, I guess the question is, how do you try to balance the goals that we're setting, and yet here we are spending money on fossil fuels, which actually makes absolutely no sense to me.
Mr. Kolesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that question. And I think that is always the challenge that we face when we're identifying these climate solutions going forward. And it is always part of the discussion that we have regarding what solutions are most ripe for use. And I think an analogy here that we can use relatively well was that when we adopted the renewable energy standard and we're looking at creating more wind on our grid, there were concerns about the cost and the ability for that to become cost effective. And now what we're seeing as the technology is developed and the costs have come down, that the renewable sources, wind and solar, are oftentimes or usually the cheapest form of electricity to be put onto the grid and be applied. And so we put those in and our utilities face that of balancing those low cost, zero emission sources with ensuring the reliability of the sources. And then finally, to the previous comment, one thing I want to make sure that is clear with Clean Cars Minnesota is that if California were to change their emission standards in the future, we would have to go through another rulemaking to adopt those. We do not automatically adopt those rules with the current rulemaking.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg, and then we'll move very quickly to Representative Elkins. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and as you can tell, there's some pretty good passion on each side of this district, this issue. I'm wondering if we can have a follow-up meeting sometime where we can get it in more depth for Mr. Chair for you to consider. Second of all is when is the ending of the public input for the California Cars In program? And when can we make those changes? Because it seems to me that if the federal standard changes back to where it's comparable to the California, it'd make more sense to follow that one instead, because we're dealing with something that is going to impact low income, those that are not going to be able to afford the newer electric vehicles for a while, and the transition that's going to happen. So this is more than just saying, well, we're going to change this overnight. So if you could answer a couple of those questions, I'd appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Kolash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that question, Representative. The public comment period is open until March 15th. We have hearings in front of the administrative law judge that are scheduled for February 22nd and February 23rd. That information is available on our website, and I encourage anyone who has comments on either way regarding the Clean Cars Minnesota rule to submit comments to the Office of Administrative Hearing Docket or participate in those hearings. And I just want to emphasize that whether you submit your information in writing to the Office of Administrative Hearings or you participate in the hearings in front of the administrative law judge, all of those comments will be judged equally, and the Pollution Control Agency will be looking at each of those going forward.
And Mr. Kolash, I'll answer Representative Petersburg's first question, because I think that he asks a good question about, you know, will we have continuing discussions about this question in committee? Absolutely, Representative Petersburg. We're going to hear in our next presentation from MnDOT, you know, part of what they're involved with sustainable transportation is looking at low carbon fuels. You know, that relates very much to the Clean Cars Initiative. You know, there's electrification, there's the an ethanol issue that's being discussed. So, you know, these are all very much related to the Transportation Committee, and we'll be looking at that probably more closely in March, Representative Petersburg. So there'll be more discussion for sure in this committee. Very quickly, Representative Elkins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a real quick observation. My understanding is that the Clean Cars Rule wouldn't fully go into effect until 2025, by which time General Motors has announced that they'll have, you know, 30 vehicles offered on the market with the reduction in battery costs over the next 4 years. Cars aren't going to be as expensive as they are now. And, you know, so it's going into effect far enough into the future by the time we get there, a lot of the concerns that I'm hearing expressed will have been addressed.
Okay, you know, I see Representative Olson, and I like Representative Olson, and so I am going to just give him a special dispensation. Representative Olson, real super quick, if we can get your question in, and then we have to move on to the next presentation. Representative Olson.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would just respond to Representative Elkins' idea there. He said that General Motors in 2025 is going to be pushing out all their electric vehicles, so why do we need more mandates when we can just let the market take care of itself? That's just a thought that just hit me.
More of a statement. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And then now I feel badly because Representative Cagle had her hand up. Representative Cagle, do you have a very quick point that you wanted to make earlier? And then we will move on after Representative Cagle.
It was like me too, Mr. Chair, then. I was just thinking about taking the easy path isn't always the best path. And, you know, who is it easier for? Like Representative Elkins said, car manufacturers are moving away from fossil fuel. I mean, you saw that really funny GM ad over the Super Bowl. So I guess I'm just a little less worried about the fossil fuel industry and just more worried about, you know, what the future is going to look like for my kids. And so, you know, I think we have to do the right thing, and the right thing isn't always the easy thing.
And thank you, Representative Cagle. And also to Representative Petersburg, we're going to talk a little bit more in our hearing a week from Thursday on electric cars. And I hope we can get a response from Norway at that hearing. We're working on that. So to the Super Bowl ad, Representative Cagle. Thank you very much, Mr. Kolash. You know, I've heard your presentation in a couple of other committees, and it's very, very informative, very well organized, and deeply appreciated your work. So thank you for joining us today. Our next speaker is Mr. Christopher Clark, and he is the president of Xcel Energy Incorporated, and he is joining us in his capacity as the co-chair of MnDOT's Sustainable Transportation Advisory Council. And I serve in an ex officio capacity. I've sat in on a number of meetings. A lot of good work is happening there. And we are so excited to have you, Mr. Clark. And I just want to thank you as a member of the House of Representatives for the work you're putting into this and the work Xcel has put into electrification of the transportation sector in general. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Chris Clark with Xcel Energy, and I'm also co-chair of the Sustainable Transportation Advisory Committee. It's a pleasure to be here. With your permission, Chair Hornstein, I'll go ahead and proceed and provide an overview of the Sustainable Transportation Advisory Council, some of the work that we've done in our first year, and then highlight some of the initial recommendations that have been made and outline some next steps.
That sounds great. Proceed.
All right. Well, we have here obviously a pre-COVID picture, and I'm so pleased that we were all able to get together with this great group. Ahead of COVID hitting us so hard, we've had some very robust discussion, but being able to convene at least once before we started convening remotely was quite helpful, as I'm sure you can all imagine, and I give you all great credit for making this democratic process work as well as you have under these challenging circumstances. So if we could move to the next slide. Advisory Council really grows out of the initial work that MnDOT did on their pathways to decarbonizing transportation, a very robust look at opportunities to decarbonize transportation and really building off of that goal set forth in the Next Generation Energy Act, as Mr. Kolesch very clearly outlined. So if you haven't had a chance to look at the pathways to decarbonizing transportation, I would encourage you to do that. One of the things that I think MnDOT recognized in that effort was the opportunity to engage with the public and to engage across Minnesota. And so the Sustainable Transportation Advisory Council is one opportunity to continue that dialogue. And if we could go to the next slide, I'll just highlight that what we're doing here on the Advisory Council is to make recommendations to MnDOT Commissioner Margaret Anderson Kelleher, who obviously is the co-chair of the STAC with me, to help the agency reduce carbon pollution from transportation, and also to be able to think about community and how we connect people through the transportation network to the opportunities that we have here in Minnesota. And of course, that also gives us an opportunity to prioritize recommendations that value equity and environmental justice, and recognize that some of our transportation history hasn't always been as embracing of that and hasn't always done as good of a job of looking across all of the communities in Minnesota as perhaps we would have liked. The Sustainable Transportation Advisory Council does work to put recommendations together and provide those to MnDOT for their reflection and for their opportunity to consider. The MnDOT is, of course, providing us great support on this advisory council, but really is not coming up with the recommendations. Rather, they're listening to us and in helping us engage in conversation with other groups as part of this effort. So if we could go to the next slide. This is just a list of the current membership profile of the STAC. You can see that we have diversity among public, private, and nonprofits. We've also got representation from different users of our transportation network, and we have people helping us think about not just the Twin Cities, not just Greater Minnesota, but all of Minnesota as we undergo this work. And of course, we're appreciative to have the opportunity to interact with the ex officio members from the legislature and other resources that are provided as we engage in this effort. So if we could go to the next slide, I'll just outline the process that we went through in 2020. We got together and at our initial meetings really helped develop a charter and outline the process by which we would work. We did break into work groups to be able to dig into issues a little bit more deeply and also to hear presentations from people who had thoughts about how to encourage sustainability in our transportation network. So you can see here we've list those work groups. And throughout the summer, we held various work group sessions and then would convene the STAC to report progress. In the fall, drafted and voted on recommendations. Again, MnDOT facilitated, but did not vote on those recommendations. And then we've really provided those over to MnDOT for their consideration and thought and to actually engage in a dialogue with us. And we're looking forward to their responses as they consider whether to accept, explore, explain why they don't feel that they can go there now or maybe never, and then also to provide other feedback to us. So the first work group, Powering and Fueling Transportation, really building off of some of the work that's been done and the effort outlined by Mr. Kolosh, wanted to try to put recommendations forward that would be helpful to moving the ball forward. So one of the things that we've suggested could be helpful is a clean fuels policy. We think that this is a real opportunity to build off of some of the sector strengths we have in Minnesota and also to work across the region. There's a nice white paper that's put forward by a group convened by the Great Plains Institute. That citation is provided here, and that's a nice overview of some different opportunities and places where that discussion could go. We also identified that additional rebates for public and private light, medium, and heavy duty EVs have been helpful in other jurisdictions, and we think could be helpful in moving progress here, and that should include dealership support as well as consumer rebates. And then finally, there's an opportunity to really invest in EV charging infrastructure to provide some of that comfort that the charging infrastructure is sufficient to support an electric vehicle usage across all of Minnesota. So those were the first tier recommendations. We also provided some second tier recommendations. These were things that received discussion and were identified as being helpful, but also ones that perhaps more dialogue could occur as we move forward. And so I won't read through all of these, but you can see those here, opportunities to work with other states, opportunities to step back and think about the corridors and how those might lend themselves to multiple purposes to help advance the goals. What sort of state level support we could provide to support medium and heavy duty electric vehicles, increase manufacturing, and then also, again, like the memorandum of understanding on the charging corridor, truck and bus MOU that could be helpful to have us collaborating with other states. These really are aimed at, again, playing to that innovation and opportunity as part of moving this forward. The next work group took a look at opportunities to reduce vehicle miles traveled and improve transportation options and came forward suggesting a goal of reducing VMT by 20% by 2050 to stop expanding highway capacity to reduce congestion and to prioritize opportunities for transit and high occupancy vehicles on MnDOT owned right of way. Happy to elaborate more on these recommendations, but I know I see hands, so I'll go ahead and keep moving to the second tier recommendations. Again, these were some recommendations that take a look at what others are doing and opportunities that we might have stepping back and taking a look at the work we do day in and day out in our transportation network in Minnesota, looking for opportunities to audit and find places where we might be more flexible in spending to create new opportunities for maintenance, transit, biking, and walking, working with and supporting local governments as they consider how to enhance their community by encouraging low carbon activities and active transportation, and considering how metrics are used as MnDOT and others look at projects in favor of people-centered metrics like reducing VMT and providing choices and accessibility. Again, there are some materials here in this presentation that are good starting points for additional thoughts and ideas on not only what we can do here in Minnesota, but what some other jurisdictions are doing, which I think is always helpful as we look at opportunities in sustainable transportation. We can see what's working well, and we can also see what's not working well for other jurisdictions. So the next steps is, I suggested earlier, we've provided those recommendations to MnDOT and know that they're hard at work taking a look at those recommendations. They plan to provide some initial feedback and additional questions they want to ask the STAC members on a meeting on the 18th of February, and then we'll formally or more formally respond to the recommendations in mid-March. Meanwhile, we have convened the STAC in 2021 and are working to engage further, think about outreach that we can do across the state and engage with MnDOT on future recommendations and dialogue. So with that, try to be quick. I know Chair Ornstein, there may be questions here, so open myself up for those as best I can. And again, just want to appreciate all the members of the STAC who I have the privilege of serving with, including Co-Chair Margaret Anderson Kelleher.
Thank you so much, Mr. Clark. You give this a lot of import, and we appreciate your time and attention to this is so appreciated. We have three questions. We're going to take them briefly, and I think by at 2:15 we are going to pivot to our last two speakers. So brief questions. I'm going to call on Representative Murphy, then Representative Elkins, then Representative Bernardi. Representative Murphy. Chairperson Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question. I don't know how my hand got up.
Okay. Well, thank you anyway. And if you do have one, of course, you can ask it later through the mail or otherwise.
Mr. Clark was very informative. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Elkins, Representative Bernardi, and then we'll move on. Representative Elkins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Clark, can I ask you to put your Xcel Energy hat on for a second? We've been receiving a lot of questions about how well energy companies like our Xcel are preparing for the current boom in electric vehicles. So I own one, and like most EV owners right now, mine gets charged in my garage at night at the off-peak Xcel rate. But I know that, you know, at night, you know, the vast majority of the energy that's going into my car is coming from nuclear and wind. And that sometimes, you guys are looking at even throttling down your nuclear plants because you're getting so much wind energy at night. So first of all, how much of an increase in demand because of EVs can you absorb without adding to your capacity just by taking advantage of the slack capacity you have at night now? And are you making plans to be able to increase your capacity in order to accommodate the full expected increased usage of electric vehicles?
Well, thank you very much for the question. And thank you. Excuse me, Chair Ornstein, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay.
Thank you for being an electric vehicle owner and user and taking advantage of that nighttime charging. It's really one of the things that we're doing to be able to maximize the use of the existing grid and resources that we have. And because of the technology, we're working with EV owners and charging companies to be able to make that a very seamless experience for the user so that you can come home and plug in and the equipment and the computers will take over and charge it at the right time when the right resources are available. One of the things we've done really well in Minnesota is we've been a leader in conservation and energy efficiency. And technology is also helping us on that front. We see things like LED lighting really making a huge impact in what was traditionally a large use of energy. So we actually see the opportunity from electric vehicles and transportation to be something to bring growth up to nearly flat sales or to maybe a slight increase in sales over the next decade as people adopt EVs. Obviously, the faster that happens, the more of a challenge it could create on the capacity side. However, we've been able to keep up very easily and expect that we'll be able to do so over the decade. The real challenge is making the more dramatic changes to the system as we eliminate coal from the system and continue to add renewables so that we can have an even lower carbon profile. And I think we'll also have some challenges to our distribution system as we work to build out the infrastructure, make sure we're sizing transformers the correct way, knowing that more and more houses more and more apartment buildings and more on-street charging options will be available. I'm quite confident that as an industry in Minnesota, we can keep up and be able to provide the support we need for electric vehicles without substantial resource additions. I do think one of the challenges we'll have is working with state agencies to find opportunities to build out the infrastructure so that people see those charging opportunities all across Minnesota, don't experience the range anxiety that some now do, and to be sure that people all across Minnesota and of all parts of our community feel that electric vehicles are for them. So we want to make sure that people in greater Minnesota feel that electric vehicles will work for them, and people in the city and our metro areas who don't have a garage, for instance, who may not want to have more than one car or who may only want to use a car on a car sharing basis, that they all feel that electric vehicles can work for them. So those are all important things to get right, but we're confident that we can do it. So appreciate the question.
Thank you. And Representative Bernardi, the last question for Mr. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here today, Mr. Clark. I appreciate the leadership you provided on the Connected and Automated Vehicle Governor's Advisory Task Force. You were an amazing facilitator, and I really appreciate the things that came out of that. And I especially liked how you were a champion for focusing on not just the infrastructure, but how it serves people. And so I want to thank you for that. And I see your fingerprints in this too about discard auto-centric metrics and more people-focused. I believe it said something like that, people-centered metrics. And so I thank you for that. And the other thing is I work a lot on performance measures and asset management in policies at the state legislature. And seeing you talk about clean fuels policy in the recommendations, the reducing voter BMT by 20% by 250, stop expanding highway capacity. How do you see, the important part is that like actually happens on the ground as we build projects and we use our state resources. How do you see as a corporate leader, what advice can you give to see that that's carried out day in and day out with sense of urgency on the ground and getting through a culture that, that you know, used to be a highway department, now it's a transportation department. And how do you see changing culture so that this happens quickly and urgently?
Mr. Clark.
Well, Representative Bernardi, it was a pleasure serving with you on the Connected and Automated Vehicle Task Force. I learned a tremendous amount from that group, and I'm learning a tremendous amount from the stack. I wish I could take credit for my fingerprints being on some of those ideas, but I think they really belong to the membership of the stack. I think a couple of things to try to directly respond to your question. First, I think that there is a great spirit of accomplishment in the Minnesota government agencies. When you look at what our government employees help the state accomplish, I think we have a lot to be proud of. Certainly MnDOT is a large organization and has much that it focuses on, but I think leadership from the top like MnDOT has, and then I think also support from the legislature as they move forward and focus the shift from maybe more traditional metrics to more inclusive metrics that think about how the transportation network really connects people to opportunities, how the transportation network connects communities and supports the sustainability of our state and helps make our communities livable, make adopting those metrics something that I think people can be proud that they're working on while still accomplishing many of those core fundamentals that the engineers who have worked in these fields for their careers want to make sure of, things like making sure that the network is robust, reliable, and safe. So I think there's a way, I know from our experience, the transition that we have made moving away from fossil fuels, adopting renewable and continuing the operation of our nuclear fleet, it takes a lot of engagement with the employees. It takes a lot of making sure that they understand what we're trying to accomplish and how our customers, or in this case, how the citizens of the state appreciate that work and how it benefits our communities. And another thing that I think we have here in Minnesota that is a nice part of embracing the life we have on cold days like today is the spirit of innovation, both in our private and public sectors. And I think as we make accomplishments, as we've made accomplishments in the energy transition, we get recognition as a state for being leaders on this front. So I think those are things that are positives that from my experience on the business side with the energy transition, we can bring to the transportation transition and have be part of the success story for us here in Minnesota. I hope that's helpful in answering your question, Representative Bernardi.
Thank you so much, Mr. Clark. Again, on behalf of all of us for your service, your work above and beyond. And we look forward to learning, you know, more of the final recommendations of the stack. And, you know, certainly the top tier as it relates to electric vehicle infrastructure and incentives are things our committee is going to be looking at moving forward. So thank you, Mr. Clark. Members, we have two more presenters, and we want them to get through their presentations. If we have time for member questions, we'll do that. But they play an important role. So we're going to take Ms. Halverson and Mr. Rockwell together. They're going to do their presentations. Ms. Halverson first, then Mr. Rockwell. And then again, if we have time for Q&A, I think we're going to be seeing both of them later in the session as well, but we want to get their presentations in. So Ms. Halverson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and committee. My name is Bree Halverson, and I'm the Minnesota Program Manager for the Blue-Green Alliance. I don't have slides, and I will try to be efficient so you have more time for Mr. Rockwell. Like I said, I work for the Blue-Green Alliance. It is a national partnership of labor unions and environmental organizations, and we were founded in 2006 right here in Minnesota. Our two founding organizations are the United Steelworkers and the Sierra Club, who came together to support the idea that workers shouldn't have to choose between good jobs and a clean environment. And we continue, and as we continue to be faced with the challenges of climate change and racial and economic inequality, these crises, we think, are inextricably linked, and as well as are their solutions. So that is why it is so wonderful that the Transportation Committee wants to discuss how investment in transportation infrastructure can not only tackle climate change, but also how this investment can help us support and create high-wage family-sustaining careers. In 2009, before this pandemic, we produced the document Solidarity for Climate Action, a platform crafted by our partners, and you have that, I believe, as materials, to begin to address our big crises of racial and economic inequality and climate change. This holistic document covers all the areas we work on at the Blue-Green Alliance, but I want to specifically highlight how transportation infrastructure funding can impact rebuilding American manufacturing. So our organization strongly supports robust investment in rebuilding America's infrastructure as critical parts of the economy, economic recovery. We all need, and so I'd like to focus on policy decisions that you'll be able to use possibly in the Transportation Committee to help rebuild and sustain American manufacturing jobs here in Minnesota. A great place for this committee to start would be to adding additional Buy American, which are procurement and incentives in domestic content. Buy Clean, that item that Representative and Chair Hornstein is very familiar with. This item helps prioritize domestic content by identifying embedded carbon in materials used in transportation building materials. So for example, rebar in a bridge. And then Buy Fair, which is local hire incentives that ensure better access to manufacturing jobs for workers in all communities. So these requirements to support infrastructure policy and thinking about other ways that transportation investment can support the manufacturing in advanced transportation technologies. So also at the time when countries around the world are rushing to capture the next generation of vehicles, vehicle manufacturing and jobs, we feel that we can't afford to go backwards. So hand in hand in investments in clean transportation infrastructure and strong clean vehicle standards We need to act now on an equally strong agenda to manufacture the next generation of advanced vehicles here in Minnesota. So the materials and technology that goes into them, if we manufacture them here in Minnesota, we'll be able to have access to those sort of growing industries. Policies that encourage domestic and local manufacturing and good jobs can be applied not only to things such as our bus fleets used in our transit authorities, but also into clean vehicles and fleets and the components and technologies that go into them. So the supply chain. We should make it a goal to invest all parts all parts and technology manufacturing, whether through new programs or through the expansion of loans, grants, tax incentive programs we see on a federal level across the country. These incentives help build, retool, and convert manufacturing plants here in America and Minnesota. Further, to enhance the benefits for the economy, communities, and working people, we should incentivize responsible labor, community and supply chain practices, prioritize reinvestment in existing or idled facilities, and in deindustrialized, impacted, and under-invested communities, prioritize economically strategic and emerging technologies and materials, and boost public investment in advanced technology vehicle fleets and related infrastructure to ensure that all public spending supports efforts to build critical components here in order to support good family-sustaining jobs.
Thank you so much. Just wrap up here to get to Ms.
Larocco. I added our manufacturing agenda as well as the Solidarity for Climate Action, and I look forward to working with you all further.
Thank you so much, and we appreciate your work, and we will be working together as we move forward in this session. Mr. Sam Rockwell is our final speaker. He is the Executive Director of MOVE Minnesota. And Mr. Rockwell, we've talked a lot about electric vehicles. I know you have a particular interest in transit. So we'll wrap up with your presentation. I don't think members were going to have an opportunity for Q&A for this panel. But if you could send your questions to me, we'll get written responses back to you. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Rockwell, please state your name for the record.
Very good. Thank you. My name is Sam Rockwell with MOVE Minnesota. And I'll do a fairly abbreviated presentation here. You know, one of the things which we know is that we need to act on climate very, very quickly. And one of the reasons why that is kind of more broad climate fact is relevant here is that we also know that we cannot get to where we need to go on the timelines we need to hit with electric vehicles alone. The production rates and distribution rates and replacement rates of the cars on the road simply isn't fast enough. And that means we need to reduce how much we drive, right? We heard about VMT reduction from Mr. Clark, and we need to reduce how much we drive a lot. The MnDOT Sustainable Transportation Advisory Committee has recommended a 20% reduction rate, reflected also in the House Climate Action Plan. And this is a number that is reflected in various research and goals by other states around the country and in Minnesota-specific research. Minneapolis and St. Paul have goals of 38% reduction of vehicle miles traveled, how much we drive, or 50% by 2050, depending on those goals. And so that works with that 20% goal statewide, because we're gonna have to have more reductions in the places where our land use patterns and our densities and the size of our metro areas allow for that greater reduction. So in some places, it's not going to be possible to reduce how much we drive as much. In some places, we're going to need to step it up. And if we are going to reduce how much we drive, it means we need to provide alternatives, right? And that means biking, walking, and in particular, transit, because transit allows us to move the kinds of volumes of people that we need to move. And transit is worth our investment, worth the state's investment, and major investment, because it's not just a tool of climate action. It's a tool of climate justice, it's a tool of justice and solving for many of our economic racial inequalities. So right now, folks who rely on transit really cannot access the kinds of opportunities that people can who own a car in the metro area, for example, here. And so we can expand those opportunities dramatically by increasing the service and coverage area of our transit. And we can also dramatically reduce the amount of money that people have to pay out for car ownership by allowing more people to rely on transit and creating a system that really works for everybody. We know that transit investments are really popular, both from MnDOT's Pathways report and from more local studies in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And we know that transit, biking, and walking can really work everywhere, right? As long as we have land use patterns that allow for biking and walking, whether it's Tower, Minnesota, with a population of 420, or Minneapolis, Minnesota, with 420,000, they both can support biking, walking, transit, and those connections. And, you know, this really requires a mindset change and a priorities change. It's not about maintaining the system that we have. It's about really tripling, quadrupling the kinds of ridership that we have in order to get those reductions in emissions and VMT. I'll end it there, given our time.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Mr. Rockwell. This is really important food for thought. I want to let you know that we're going to be talking quite extensively about transit as we move forward. Particularly in a couple weeks, we're going to have a hearing on arterial bus rapid transit and some proposals that are coming forward. So I think we'll invite you and your organization back for that hearing as well. And members, we will be meeting this Thursday at our usual time of 1 o'clock. We're going to be hearing a number of bills. We don't have any overviews scheduled for Thursday. It'll be bill hearings. And then the following Tuesday, a week from today, we'll be hearing from the Department of Public Safety, their update on the MnDrive program. We'll be talking about trunk highway bonds with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And so with that, members, thank you again to all the presenters and members that participated. We stand adjourned.